Since this last Tuesday, Catholics across America have been observing what the American bishops have called the Fortnight for Freedom, 14 days of praying and fasting for the protection of religious liberty. 14 days that culminate in the celebration of the 4th of July, the day in 1776 when our founders signed their names to the Declaration of Independence, giving birth to a new nation conceived in the radical notion that, quote, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness." A very simple statement, but a very profound ideal. A few years later, having won the War of Independence, some of these same men, along with other patriots, came up with a plan to make that ideal of a nation become a reality. The Constitution that they gave us began with the words stating their very purpose. Quote, "We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty." Both these foundational documents, right in the beginning, set an ambitious plan for the new nation that has led us to become perhaps the greatest nation the earth has ever seen. And at the heart of this greatness is one key ideal enshrined right at the beginning of both of those documents, the ideal of liberty. Liberty, a precious word, a noble ideal, a principle to fight and die for. But with all that, what does liberty really mean? Does it mean freedom to do whatever you want? Freedom from any constraints, legal, social, economic, moral, or religious? But how could a nation survive like that if everyone did just whatever they wanted to? And on the other hand, if we put constraints on freedom, how could we really live in liberty? The answer is that some constraints, which seem at first to take away freedom, actually enhance freedom. So while, for example, self-discipline seems to be an act that is contrary to freedom, to do as you feel like, in reality, it allows you to control your irrational emotions and appetites so that you can make rational choices of what is best for you. As St. Paul reminds us today, do not use this freedom as an opportunity for the flesh. For the flesh has desires against the spirit. These are opposed to each other so that you may not do what you want. It's the same with all social disciplines, whether they're rules or laws or norms, that help us control our passions and impulses so that we, the people, can live together in a more perfect union with justice and domestic tranquility, and in all this secure the blessings of liberty. But all this presupposes that we can all agree on basic principles that we share as a fundamental set of common values that help define and even limit the laws that we enact to discipline ourselves. Sometimes the laws that discipline ourselves go too far. But it all has to be based on common principles. And from the very beginning, Americans have shared a set of common values. And they begin with two principles laid out in the Declaration of Independence. First, the idea that there are some self-evident truths, truths that we just know, or that either by they're obvious at first sight or they become obvious after careful, rational consideration. And second, that one of these self-evident truths is that there is a Creator who gives us not only certain unalienable rights, but also gives us all those self-evident truths, that he writes into creation certain natural laws, the way things are naturally. As the Declaration puts it, the laws of nature and of nature's God. And so we begin with these two fundamental American values, and from them flow all sorts of other American values about the way things ought to be. But nowadays, people blush or even get angry if you talk about God giving us the order of things. But there it is, right in the beginning of our nation, right at the beginning of our foundational documents. And without the idea that God determines what is right and wrong, and not kings, and not lords and congressmen or presidents or judges either, without God, the notion of God giving us the truth, there would never have been an America. And America couldn't have grown to be the great nation that it became. And the thing is, right from the beginning, it wasn't just some vague notion of a supreme creator or of a nameless creator out there that America looked to for guidance. It was the God who had a name that almost every American worshipped and believed in. The God that George Washington spoke of in 1783 when he wrote to the governors of the various states as he disbanded his army. And he spoke about, quote, the characteristics of the divine author of our blessed religion. Without a humble imitation of whose example in these things, we can never hope to be a happy nation. Our blessed religion, he spoke about, and the divine author. He was speaking about the religion of Christianity and the religion and the founder of Christianity, Jesus Christ, our God. At the same time, Washington knew that many Christians disagreed on certain tenets of the faith. Catholics, Presbyterians, Episcopalians, Baptists, they each had their own unique ideas about certain things. Nevertheless, Washington called us for us to tolerate those differences while at the same time recognizing and building our United States on the fundamental values that we held in common, what he called the pure spirit of Christianity. Let's be very clear. Both Washington and I believe that the differences between the various denominations and churches are important. But the point is that the basic Christian values held in common are also important. Nowadays, the different Christian denominations and churches have a lot of radically different ideas in their teachings, especially when it comes to what is right and wrong. But that's not the way it was in 1776 or 1783. All Christians shared basically the same set of fundamental moral beliefs of what's right and wrong. And those Christian beliefs form the fundamental common American values. Unfortunately, our founding was imperfect because while it was founded on solid Christian principles, it also was founded by men. As Virginia's own James Madison wrote in the Federalist Papers, if men were angels, he wrote, no government would be necessary. So, for example, while professing the basic Christian value that all men are created equal, that we find right at the beginning of the Bible in chapter 1, and holding that, as St. Paul says, for freedom Christ set us free, the founders wound up tolerating a terrible exception to that norm, slavery. Eventually, good Christians organized the abolitionist movement against slavery. It was Christians who did that, based on our Christian values. But in the end, slavery was so entrenched that it had to be cut out by force, by civil war. As President Lincoln would admonish his fellow Americans, both North and South, in his Gettysburg Address, it was a turning point in the war, and he said there, quote, we have here highly resolved that these dead should not have died in vain, that this nation under God shall have a new birth in freedom, and that government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth. A nation under God, given a new birth of freedom in God, but this time more closely aligned to the fundamental Christian values of the people, of the American people, American values of Christianity. Sadly, today, most Americans have lost any sense that our foundation is on Christian values. And so the question has to be asked, can a nation founded on Christian values survive if it casts off those Christian values? If it replaces those Christian values with secular humanist values, values based on a false notion of liberty as a freedom to do whatever you want, values not ordered by self-evident truths that God wrote into our very nature, but in the dictates from relativistic laws and even lies that change from day to day. Values that allow our feelings and our impulses to dominate our reason and blind us to ignore self-evident truths and so enslave us to our base desires. As St. Paul reminds us, for freedom Christ set us free, so stand firm and do not submit again to the yoke of slavery. How can the nation conceived in liberty survive if the values that keep liberty from becoming either chaos or slavery are cast aside? And yet, our government officials continue to do just that. Exactly 1 year ago today, June 26th, the United States Supreme Court set aside the common values that made this nation possible and invented a brand new constitutional right never existed before called same-sex marriage. Some see same-sex marriage as a matter of equal rights and compare it to the equal rights struggle for blacks, including the fight against slavery. But the thing is, America has never denied the right to marry to anyone, as long as they do what marriage does, form a union between members of the opposite sex. Because that's what Americans have always understood marriage to be. In the same way that they believe that God created us equal in dignity and rights, Americans also believe that it was self-evident truth that God also clearly created men and women different in their bodies, so that by their nature they could be joined together in a union ordered toward producing and raising children. It's absurd to say that when almost every American has believed for two centuries is somehow now inconsistent with the values enshrined in the Constitution. And yet that's what the court did. And building on that decision, that's what other courts and even state and local governments are doing now. Earlier this month, the Fairfax County Public School Board made a new rule requiring that in their schools there would be no discrimination of any kind against so-called transgendered people. This means that boys who think they're girls can, for example, play on the girls' sports teams. If that happens, it happened in Alaska just recently, we read, and the boy dominated the sport, which means girls will not have their share to participate. But more than that, it means that a boy, if he claims to be a girl, can shower naked with your daughter at school. And there's not one darn thing you can do about it. Doesn't matter if your daughter comes home crying, traumatized by this abuse. In fact, if she is traumatized, according to the rules in place now, she had better be quiet about it because she will be punished for discriminating against her abuser, maybe even expelled. Where is her liberty? How can this be in America? Are these the values George Washington and Abraham Lincoln proclaimed? Are these the values that hundreds of thousands of Americans, including so many of you in this church today, have fought, sacrificed, and even died for on the battlefields around the world? Are these the American values that so many of you who are immigrants to our country left home and family to pursue as you came to the land of liberty? Yet that is where we are today. How can we survive this, especially if our Christian values are replaced by values that are directly contradictory to Christian values? We did that once with slavery when we tried to say that mere human laws could redefine what it means to be a human being. For 67 years, that ate at the fiber of our nation and almost destroyed it, winding up in 500,000 men dying in war. We cannot compromise the self-evident truth about the order that God created. And we cannot maintain a nation that rose above all others based on the Christian values it embraced if we discard those values or embrace their opposites. When the founders guaranteed the right to religious liberty in the Constitution, they intended to protect the rights of all Americans to worship and to live according to their faith, as long as they did not conflict with the basic shared values of Americans, what Washington called the pure spirit of Christianity. Not one of our founding fathers, and almost no other American living up until 50 years ago, would have ever dreamed that one day we'd be invoking our constitutional right to religious liberty simply in order to live by the moral code that America was founded on. As we continue this fortnight for freedom leading up to the 4th of July, we rightly thank God for the many gifts that He has bestowed on our nation for these 240 years. But let us also pray for the protection of our religious liberty, not only so that we can live as we were called to by Jesus, but also so that we can share our Christian values with our fellow countrymen, so that those values may, by the grace of Jesus Christ, once again lead our nation to recognize the self-evident truths written in nature by the God who created us all and who has given us so many gifts. For freedom, Christ set us free. So stand firm and do not submit again to the yoke of slavery. Praise be Jesus Christ.